Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Apple faces fresh legal challenges as five tech companies file suit over its App Store. Plus, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson says enough's enough to dissident Republicans and plans to rely on Democrats to avoid a government shutdown. In state capitalism, what is it and why do American presidents love it so much?
The government doesn't actually go out and buy companies or order them around, but it sort of intervenes regularly and says, hey, businesses, this is what we think is the national interest. This is what you should be doing.
It's Thursday, March 21st. I'm Peter Granitz for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Luke Vargas. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Meta platforms, Microsoft, X, Spotify, and Match Group have filed legal petitions protesting Apple's App Store policies. The five companies are objecting to how the tech giant has complied with a federal court ruling that ordered Apple to allow alternative payment methods. Apple charges up to a 30% commission for purchases in the App Store for services or one-time fees, a rate that developers say is too high, but which Apple has defended, saying it invests in privacy and security measures that protect users. Sam Schechner is the Journal's European tech reporter.
These rivals are going to continue trying to fight to force the maker of iPhones to loosen its controls over third-party software on its platform. And they are fighting this in the US in court. The EU recently fined Apple in a case involving Spotify. And there's a new law in Europe, the Digital Markets Act, that has led to disputes as well. The services business through the App Store is one of Apple's biggest businesses. And so the question really is, how much control will they continue to have over that? And what kinds of commissions will they be able to get in the future? And will what consumers pay to use third-party apps, will that money go entirely to those app developers? Will it go in part to Apple? And how will they divide up that pie? That's billions of dollars at stake.
Apple is also facing an investigation by the Justice Department, which could soon file an antitrust complaint about its business practices. Meanwhile, Reddit has priced its IPO at the top of its target range, giving the company a valuation of roughly $6.4 billion. The social media forum is set to go public later today under the ticker RDDT, pricing its shares at $34 apiece. Our social media reporter Sarah Needleman says the valuation is on the higher end and that future revenues could prove even more lucrative for Reddit.
The company makes money mostly from advertising. And what's interesting is they built their own in-ad network in the past couple of years from the ground up. So they're not relying on third parties to automate ads. Advertising is the vast majority of the revenue, but there is a new twist, and that is AI. So what Reddit has been doing recently is it started selling access to its data, its API, and the biggest customers, what they hope to be the biggest customers, licensing it, are AI companies. So that's a whole new line of revenue coming in for Reddit. It's still small. It's still early days, but that could be a big change for the company.
And you can hear much more about Reddit's IPO on today's Tech News Briefing podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And the Bank of England will today round out a banner week for central banks after news from the BOJ, ECB, and Fed this week. Yesterday, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell signaled three rate cuts are still on the cards for this year, despite stickier-than-expected inflation. That means investors now think the Fed will cut rates by June, a move expected to be echoed by the European Central Bank as well. Paul Hannon is an economics editor for Dow Jones Newswires and says central banks are finally starting to see inflation stabilize.
The Swiss National Bank has surprisingly cut its key interest rate. And in doing that, it's become the first central bank from a rich, advanced economy to lower borrowing costs since this surge in inflation started way back in 2021. So this is definitely a sign that across rich countries as a whole, interest rates are likely to fall. The Bank of England has been a little bit vague about exactly when it will lower its key rates, and most investors sort of expect that to happen in August. But as the Swiss central bank has just demonstrated, investor expectations can turn out to be wrong. And it may be possible that the Bank of England will come in earlier, possibly alongside the Fed and the ECB in June.
Israeli security officials are crafting a plan to distribute aid in Gaza. That is according to both Israeli and Arab officials. It's being led by a top Israeli general who has been traveling to regional capitals to garner support for the effort. It does not yet have the support of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, because it could involve people close with the Palestinian Authority, the body that governs the West Bank. Journal Middle East editor Michael Amon says the proposal would have anti-Hamas Palestinians run aid distribution networks throughout Gaza.
So the aid would come in from multiple places. There is humanitarian aid being brought in by the UN and the WFP. That has slowed down to a trickle, but Israel and the US and Arab governments are working to get that boosted. So that would be one source of aid. Israel has opened up a new land crossing in the north and is escorting aid in with troops. And that would also be a big source of aid that would go to this network of distributors. And then there's also a sea corridor in which aid is inspected by Israelis in Cyprus and then shipped to port being built in Gaza.
He says it could be weeks or months before it could be implemented.
This is part of the evacuation plan, actually, that Israel has begun creating for getting civilians out of the city of Rafah, which is a border town in southern Gaza that is the last stronghold of Hamas. Israel is planning an offensive on Rafah, but is held back as ceasefire talks are ongoing in Qatar with Hamas, the US, and other Arab governments. If all goes well, in an ideal world, civilians would be moved out of Rafah into displacement camps, many of them along the beach, running north to south. And this aid distribution network would in large part be aimed at feeding the people in those camps, which could be 750,000 to a million people.
On Capitol Hill, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson has indicated he will move forward with legislation to avoid a partial government shutdown this weekend, defying members of his own caucus who want to slow the process down. Both chambers of Congress need to pass the remaining six funding bills before tomorrow's deadline. Many of Johnson's fellow Republicans objected to the short turnaround, arguing that Johnson must follow House rules and make the text available 72 hours before a vote. But with a tight deadline, Johnson will bring the bill forward and will need to rely on Democratic votes to pass it.
We have to govern, and we have to demonstrate that we can keep the train on the tracks, and we are.
Johnson is using a procedure that does not require the 72-hour window, but that path means the spending bills will need a two-thirds majority to pass. Donald Trump's social media platform could be listed on the stock market as early as next week. That would lead to a major windfall for the former president, as much as $3.5 billion. Truth Social's parent company is set to go public by merging with a special purpose acquisition company. If shareholders approve the merger Friday, Trump's company could replace the SPAC on the market as early as Monday. Truth Social has failed to catch on with users and has performed poorly financially. It burned through tens of millions of dollars in cash, but the valuation of the SPAC that it hopes to merge with has soared to $6 billion. Trump owns 60% of the shares. He would have to hold the shares until September before he could sell them, but regulatory filings show he could request a waiver to sell them early or borrow against their value. The Truth Social valuation comes as Trump faces a cash crunch and remains unable to secure a bond to guarantee payment of a $454 million fraud judgment against him. The deadline to do so is also Monday. Coming up, subsidies, tax breaks, the bully pulpit, using the powers of the federal government to influence business. Our economics commentator says presidents of both parties embrace state capitalism. We've got that story and more after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
If TikTok gets sold, the decision to do so will not be made in its boardroom. The real deciders will be in Washington. The same goes for U.S. Steel. Washington, will ultimately decide whether the iconic Pennsylvania company gets bought by a Japanese firm or one based in Ohio. That is because the United States is slouching towards state capitalism. So writes our chief economics commentator, Greg Ipp. Greg, lay it out. How do you define state capitalism?
Well, most people have heard of socialism, which is where the government largely controls or owns the means of production. State capitalism is a more lukewarm version of government intervention. The government doesn't actually go out and buy companies or order them around, but it sort of intervenes regularly and says, hey, businesses, this is what we think is the national interest. This is what you should be doing. And we're going to pass laws. We're going to change taxes. We're going to use the bully pulpit to make sure you do that. And it goes all the way from extreme versions like you have in China, where the Beijing literally does control many companies and order other companies around, to what I would call like the version that the U.S. is slouching towards, where increasingly Congress and the president and various political figures see it as their duty and their privilege and their right to basically tell companies what to do because it fits with whatever their definition of the national interest is.
And you write that it isn't just one party that believes in this system. Both Joe Biden and Donald Trump have embraced state capitalism, perhaps without saying as much. Give us some examples.
Well, right. I mean, first of all, the United States has never been a pure laissez-faire paradise. I mean, you only have to look at the military-industrial complex to see that government and business have always been intertwined to some extent. But at least as a matter of principle, U.S. leaders on both sides more or less subscribe to the idea that free market capitalism was the most superior system and that private business should be allowed to decide how to allocate capital to what was best for their shareholders. But I don't think either Trump or Biden believe that. I'm not sure if either of them ever have. I mean, Trump in his first term in office made that clear, telling companies not to like move production to other countries using trade law, tariffs, and so forth to punish foreign companies and aid American companies, and taking extremely personal opinions and approaches to decisions about, for example, what mergers were allowed to happen, even whether TikTok should be bought or sold. Joe Biden's version of state capitalism is perhaps a little less personal. He sort of embraces industrial policy. We should be handing out subsidies and tax breaks to favored companies for things like green energy. But when last week he said Nippon Steel should not be allowed to buy U.S. steel, he went beyond that to a very political interpretation of state capitalism. Effectively, he doesn't want a takeover to occur that hurts his political base, which is unionized workers.
What's the risk here? Is it the message that business can't be certain of what's to come in the United States?
I think there's a couple of risks. The first is that, from a matter of basic economics, is that when businesses are motivated by something other than what's the highest return on their money, they make poor investments. Another is that, honestly, it's very difficult to actually do state capitalism smartly. You end up like passing one rule, like a tariff, and then passing another rule, like a subsidy, to make up for the damage of the first rule. The final risk is that, essentially, people in power end up being incapable of distinguishing between the national interest and their own personal interest. Trump was for TikTok being sold. Now, apparently, he's against it. And same with Biden. I mean, whether or not he wins Pennsylvania, that seems to be driving this latest decision. And businesses themselves naturally respond to these signals. So Cleveland Cliffs, a competitor to Nippon Steel, is working the political system for its purposes to try and defeat Nippon Steel's bid. And if you look at the various machinations for what happens to TikTok, we see Steve Mnuchin, a former Treasury Secretary for Donald Trump, is now making his own play for it, which clearly one can see probably has some connection to the politicization of the ultimate outcome of that decision.
Is there any concrete evidence that this state capitalism in the United States is actually deterring businesses from operating there?
It's probably a little bit too soon, but you can certainly see in our conversations that they are sort of taking into account the possibility of political interference in the way they behave, the investments that they make, and so forth. This is the sort of thing that will see its effects felt more subtly and slowly over time.
But presumably these companies are going to make decisions more for the medium term instead of the long term because they have to think about the next political election.
Well, certainly they're going to try and do their best for the medium term or the long term. For example, whether Intel is going to invest a lot of money in semiconductor facilities in the United States is both a function of the subsidies that it hopes to get to do that made in America construction, but also it has to fit with its 5 to 10 year plan. But the huge risk, of course, is that any business that bets on any continuity in the direction of state capitalism is at risk of a new president coming in deciding to go in a completely different direction. So one aspect of Biden's state capitalism is he wants electric vehicle batteries to be made in America. But he doesn't want them made by Chinese companies. So if you're Ford, you have to decide, well, do we want to do business with the Chinese battery company or do we not? If you're General Motors, you have to make the same decision. And you have to weigh the possibility that a few years from now, Donald Trump will be the president and he'll decide to like just ditch the entire program altogether.
Greg Ip is the Journal's chief economics commentator. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
And finally, the first games of the NCAA tournament have begun. This year's March Madness gets underway amid a push for unionization in college sports, most recently at Dartmouth. What questions do you have about that and what it means for colleges, athletes, and sports in general? Send us a note, or even better, record a voice memo on your phone and send it to wnpod@wsj.com. That is wnpod@wsj.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 212-416-4328. Just be sure to include your name and location because we might use it on the show. And that is what's news for Thursday morning. Today's show was produced by Hattie Moya and Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kielhoff, and I'm Peter Granitz for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Luke Vargas. We'll be back tonight with a new show. Until then, thanks for listening.